Now, David Graham, editor of Science's free online daily news site, Science Now, joins us to talk about the latest science stories. Hi, David.
Hey, Rob.
So what stories do you have for us today?
Well, Rob, we're going to talk about why the U.S. military is no match for Caribbean coral, why some animals need more sleep than others in the wild, and finally, we're going to decode the secret behind white horses.
Well, let's start with how the military isn't any match for Caribbean coral. Has there been an active campaign against Caribbean coral?
Well, in a way, yes. Rob, this story has to do with the Puerto Rican island of Vieques. And this island had been used as a testing ground by the U.S. Navy for nearly 60 years. Bomber pilots, naval gunners, and even assault troops stormed the island, blasting tons of explosives all over the place, and especially in the waters. So biologists had figured that these reefs had pretty much been decimated by all this military activity. But when a group of researchers actually did a comprehensive survey of the reefs off this island and compared it to nearby Caribbean islands, such as the island of St. Croix, what they found was not only were these reefs not decimated, but they were in as good, if not better, shape than reefs in nearby islands that were protected.
Do scientists have some explanation as to how this occurred?
Well, clearly, the reefs did endure some damage. There were places where the reef was completely pulverized by explosions. But what actually may have helped protect the reefs is not that they had some super ability to resist military bombardment, is that the fact that a few years ago, the military actually closed off this island.
So there wasn't ongoing damage like there might have been at these other islands.
Well, it's not so much that as the fact that when the Navy closed off the island during the bombing, there wasn't any tourist development or development of any kind happening on the island. And what's more, when the Navy stopped bombing in 2003, they designated the entire island and the reef system a wildlife refuge, so there couldn't be any development since 2003. And when you compare that to nearby islands, where there has been tourist development, and this causes all sorts of problems like runoff that goes into the water and can pollute the water and obviously damage the coral, you didn't have that problem. Even though you had all the bombings on Vieques, you didn't have all this runoff problem. And the researchers say the real surprising conclusion is it turns out this runoff and all these other side effects of tourist development may actually be more damaging than 60 years of naval bombardment.
Sounds like there may be some strategy then for how to rebuild the corals in the Caribbean.
It is hopeful, but at least one expert says that this study may be painting too bright a picture. He says nobody really knows what the long-term impact of all this bombing is. And he does note that the researchers did point out that some of this reef was completely pulverized by the bombing. So clearly, bombing itself isn't good for the reefs. But this idea that if you close off an island to development, that you can protect the reefs, I think should be important to conservationists who are thinking about how to protect coral reefs in the Caribbean and elsewhere.
Well, from shutting down an island and allowing corals to rest, to why some animals can rest more in the wild. I presume some of it has to do with whether they're sleeping above or below ground.
Right, and actually that's part of the answer. But it's a really complicated question. This is an issue that biologists have been grappling with for literally decades. Some animals, like donkeys, only sleep about 3 hours a day, whereas you have animals like bats or armadillos that sleep 20 hours at a time. And why is there such difference in the wild between how much they get? And researchers have proposed a whole slew of explanations. But it's really hard to test all these theories. When people try to test these theories, they often bring animals back to the laboratory, and that's not a real natural setting. So it's hard to say what exactly is happening.
So in the wild, then, what exactly is happening?
Well, what's new about this study is the researchers actually did focus on wild animals. In fact, they spent 2 years combing through tons of data on sleep patterns for 150 mammals, and they narrowed it down to about 60 that there was a real comprehensive data set for. And then using, you know, various statistical analyses, they narrowed this sleep question down to two factors, food and fear. And the food factor goes like this. Animals sleep less if they need to spend a lot of time grazing, as you might expect with, say, herds of horses. If they're spending their whole day and night grazing, they don't have a lot of time for sleep. And the fear factor goes to this idea that if you live in a location that's very sensitive to predation, say, living on the ground versus living in trees, you're going to spend less time sleeping because you're worried about getting eaten. And these two things sound very intuitive, but until now it was hard to show it. But one surprising finding did pop out, and that was that social animals that sleep in groups tend to sleep a lot less than non-social animals. And that's sort of the opposite of what you expect, because if animals live in groups, you would expect that they would be protecting each other and maybe watching over each other, and they would be able to sleep a lot more. But social animals also tend to be animals that spend a lot of their days grazing. And so again, these animals are spending a lot of their day doing foraging activities and therefore don't have as much time for sleep.
I suppose the only way then to get more information would be to actually hook up sleep monitors on free-ranging animals?
Well, that's one way. But of course, again, you have the problem of disrupting an animal in its natural environment. So these types of studies are very tricky to do. And this is probably the best we can do as of now.
Well, from understanding why it is that some animals get to sleep more than others to understanding the coloration of particular horses, humans have probably had some impact in preserving certain colors of horses over the centuries. No?
Yeah, they have, Rob. And white horses especially have been very prized. Think of the horses of the Arabian Nights or even the Lone Ranger's Silver. These white or gray horses, as they're officially known, have been with us for quite a while, but researchers don't know what makes these gray horses gray.
Why is it important to know?
Well, beyond it just being a curiosity, how did these gray horses get gray in the first place, is the fact that gray horses actually tend to have a much shorter lifespan than their darker counterparts. They tend to get cancer at around age 15 and can die soon after. And the original thought before this paper came out was that this had something to do with human cancers as well.
So what did this paper examine exactly?
Well, before the study was conducted, the researchers hypothesized that if there was a so-called gray horse gene, that it was dominant, meaning that horses only had to inherit one copy of it to become gray. They also knew about where this gene might lie if it existed, but they didn't know what the gene was. And so a team of researchers looked at about 700 gray horses and about 130 non-gray horses. And they compared the genetic sequence on the specific region of chromosome 25. And what they found was that in a gene called STX17, which as of yet has no known function, there was a duplication of about 4,600 base pairs. And all of the gray horses had this duplication, and none of the non-gray horses had this duplication. So the researchers said, aha, this must be the genetic change that causes gray horses to be gray. And what's also interesting about this duplication is that because the same duplication was present in all of the gray horses the researchers looked at, that means all these gray horses share a common ancestor.
How did they disprove the human cancer connection?
Well, what they did was they looked at tumors from gray horses, and they found that the expression of this STX17 gene was much higher in these tumors than it was in normal gray horse cells. And so not only does part of this gene appear important for the coloring of the horse, it also appears to play a role in cancer, specifically melanoma. And melanoma is an overproduction of cells called melanocytes.
Skin cancer.
Exactly. Skin cancer. And so you can imagine if you have a duplication of a gene, maybe you're expressing a lot more of it, which is causing more of these cells to form potentially, which may be leading to the cancer. But the mechanism is still unknown. But what's interesting is what you have is the same genetic change that is causing the horses to have this gray color also seems to be predisposing them to cancer.
But that's not the same mechanism that leads to human cancers?
Right, because human melanomas have a different gene expression pattern. So whereas some studies have tried to glean information about what's happening in human melanoma from horses, because horses also get it, this study says that they're really not directly comparable because horses may be getting melanoma for a completely different reason than humans do.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now?
Well, Rob, we're looking to stories about the unrealized power of parasites, how monkeys tell each other to watch out, and finally, we're delving into the mysteries of the Northern Lights. So be sure to check out the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the free online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science stories at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.